Good morning, Arms Room listeners. You got Mason.
And John.
And not Glenn.
No Glenn a third today. Woo! Aw.
So we run this
stuff. Word. Yeah, right. Word. We're in charge,
yo. Said we're not allowed to say potty words, so.
Oh. Dang it.
Well.
That just removed like two-thirds of my vocabulary.
But you know who's not here?
Glenn.
Glenn.
But you know who's probably not listening either?
Glenn. Yes, this is glorious.
Oh, we're going to have so much fun today.
Woo! So our topic for, well, we're not just going to jump straight into the topic, but our topic for today is My Army Was Harder Than Your Army. And we're going to dispel some myths about that maybe, and or John might punch you in the face.
It's possible. You'll there's a bet like going. A, there's a bet going.
Like a solid, you know, so you, we'll see about that.
If you go to the Arms Room Show Facebook page, you can actually chime in on the bet. And if you've got questions or complaints or concerns about what we're talking about today, if you're listening live, we'll gladly address them. Or
do you have that pulled up?
No, but I'll get it pulled up in just a second.
Because cool. I don't know if I can.
Or we'll address them at a later date if you're not listening live and you listen like most of our listeners do at their
in
leisure.
The past.
They listen
so
at their
leisure.
So we're
coming to you live from the future.
Word.
Oh, I hate when we do that.
Yeah, I do too. So how was your weekend, Mason?
My weekend was good. I actually traveled to Utah with Glenn and another instructor of ours, Josh, and shot the Hard as Hell 2-gun match that was up at the Purgatory Flats Range in St. George.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's where it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they don't call it Hard as Hell for nothing.
No, they
it
don't.
It was Hard as F, actually.
Yeah.
I'd say you change the name. It's kind of a misnomer.
Hard AF.
Hard AF. Yeah, it was a tough match. We all shot Armored Trooper, so you got to wear plates. And you have to, trooper means you have to carry every piece of equipment that you need for that day on your person at all times. At the end of each day, like when you go home to your hotel, you can resupply, you know, from your main supply cache or whatever, I guess, keeping with the trooper theme. But you go see your supply sergeant and get some more stuff.
But, hey, Sarge, I need some more bullets for tomorrow. I ran out today at lunch.
And can you pack me another lunch, please? If your supply sergeant happens to be your mommy, like me, then...
Aww.
No, so then you have to carry everything for the next day, of course, on your person. And the first day, we all shot a ton of ammo.
So yeah, Glenn was telling me about some of those stages.
Not going to have enough ammo. So then we all overloaded that ammo for the next day and then had too much ammo that we were just carrying around with us all day long. So that was glorious. A lot of us also got... I was going to say, too, if you're one of those military guys that listens to our show and for whatever reason still doesn't think competition is relevant to training, you need to get out there and try it. Because there were grown-ass men getting resoundingly beaten by a 13- and 12-year-old girl this weekend.
I saw that. There were two girls, the youngest trooper competitors ever.
So not only were they young girls shooting this match and winning, they did trooper, so they carried every piece of gear they needed for all the or for those 2 days on their person the entire match. And that doesn't mean you like set it down at each stage and shoot the stage.
You have to shoot it.
You got to shoot the stage with all that crap on your person.
Yeah, buddy.
So they had big old backpacks full of stuff and running around shooting, and they just beat people like a drum, myself included.
Yeah,
they didn't shoot armor,
right.
But they did
it's
shoot
all right. You went out there and did it. I did not.
And I didn't place last.
That's the key.
So I achieved my personal goal to not get last place.
Nice. I actually had a pretty chill weekend. Saturday I was hanging out at Cowtown for the Arizona 2-gun match. That was fun. Met some interesting people, saw some really interesting things. Once again, there were a bunch of guys out there and running armor and trooper heavy. And, I mean, you know, everybody was out having fun, flipping tires, jumping things.
Ooh, tire flipping.
Yeah, had a guy eat it going over a wall.
Ha.
That was kind of rough moment, but he was fine. He was like, does this count as a DQ if I don't finish? And, no, you'll be all right.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
And then yesterday, HH6 had me doing yard work all day, taking down fences and scooping up piles of weeds and cleaning yards, and it was terrible.
Sounds entertaining.
Absolutely terrible.
Does your whole body hurt today?
Mostly my shoulders and my calves.
My traps are killing me from wearing that freaking armor all weekend.
I don't understand why my calves hurt
too long.
They do.
I on that note of someone eating it, I gotta give a shout out to this dude we shot the match with. Works with WePlead, Razo. Dude freaking dove into this tunnel that you had to dive through, slide down the tunnel into this trench, right? Well, on the way down, his, like, ankle caught the tubing, And then somehow it like just destroyed his ankle. And that was day two, our first stage of day two. And we had five stages left day two to shoot. He just screws up his ankle so bad, but he finishes the stage. So he had to crawl through this trench and shoot these pistol targets and then run up the side of this freaking berm over to the other side to shoot some more pistol targets. And not only that, but he also continued the whole rest of the day and shot it with a busted ankle and beat people. He won the division that he was in open.
Nice.
I think he placed, if not first, top three for sure. He got a prize and everything for it. Nice. He just freaking killed it with a busted ankle. So good on you, dude. That was freaking sweet. Anything else you did this weekend?
No, that was it. Last Thursday, so coincidentally, folks, we still have people kicking in doors and slaying buddies. Navy SEAL lost his life in the line of duty in Somalia. Going up against a group of people that don't particularly care for the way America lives.
Oh, how dare they?
So,
yeah, it's not just Afghanistan.
Nope, it's not just Afghanistan or Iraq. We have guys all over the world doing stuff and things. So, fair winds and following seas, buddy.
It always sucks to hear about that stuff.
Yeah, it's always rough, man.
I didn't see anything on the media about it, though.
No.
Big media, anyway. You wouldn't.
No, not at all.
I don't have a lot of news today. One thing I did want to mention, just because it's kind of funny to me personally, I really don't care too much about it, but if you don't know, France just had their presidential election. And the only reason I bring it up is because it was actually pretty similar to our recent presidential election. On the one side, you had kind of a, I guess right wing would be a term that you would use, president who was like, hey, a lot of people are dying because of this whole immigration thing, so maybe we should tone it down, be more strict on them, provide more aid to this whole let's blow up people in Syria thing, and just a more hardline French president versus, of course, a hippie French president that was like, no, let's all just get along and just let more people come in and it'll be happy and we'll all be successful. But in France, their election actually had the opposite result that our did. So
France, the hippie
totally,
won.
Yeah, France totally shut down. Their last chance at survival.
Not becoming a third world country.
Yeah, and chose the hippie guy. So it'll be interesting to see how rapidly they fall into total decline.
Viva la France. You did, guys. You did.
I mean, look, we owe France a little bit for the whole helping us in the beginning thing. And here's what we owe you. Don't elect that president. Oh, they didn't take our bus.
So sorry,
we
guys. Tried.
We don't owe you anything anymore. So that's going to be pretty silly to see that in the future.
God. It's a disaster.
I think that's all I have for news. I haven't really looked anything up, to be honest with you, because I was busy.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot. I was pretty busy this weekend. So we'll do the Red Wire Gear moment.
Yeah, go.
Brought to you by Red Wire Gear.
Oh.
At redwiregear.com. Shop local when possible. And that's in all aspects of your life. Whether you're buying gear, whether you're going grocery shopping, go to your local farmer's market, whatever. Try to do as much business as you can locally because it helps support your local community, obviously. It helps provide jobs for your local community. It helps cut down on, not to sound like a raging hippie, but it helps to cut down on your carbon footprint. And, you know, it helps. It's good. It's good for you. It's good for the environment. It's good for your community. So shop local when possible. I know here in Arizona, specifically when I go to buy shooting accessory things, we have a plethora of companies that are within a rock throwing distance of the studio here.
Yeah,
actually,
which is really nice.
You know, so shop local when possible. Do your best to support the local guys. That's it. Red Wire Gear moment brought to you by Red Wire Gear. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram.
If you don't have their sling, you're wrong.
Yeah, if you don't have one of our slings, you're not cool.
Increases testosterone 33%?
Anecdotally, yes.
Perfect. Done.
So. All
right, so let's jump right into this super controversial topic. Apparently, it's going to get me punched in the face.
Yeah, what are we talking about today?
Oh, yes,
I totally forgot.
Today we are talking about my army is harder than your army.
You're probably right, because your army is way different than mine.
True, but if you notice throughout history, it's always the previous army was harder than the next army.
Oh, yeah, it's always. I don't know that I agree with harder.
I think part of it is just because people really like to feel special and validated, so they always have to be better than the next generation of people that come along.
Mm.
Not all people, of course, but some people.
All right. Maybe they were right. Maybe I am going to punch you in the face today.
Possibly. Let's find out. Well, you were a Marine, so it doesn't count because you're just better than everybody, right?
That's true. And we're going to
talk about how much better Marines are.
No, we'll actually jump in on that real quick to kind of get the show going. So if you don't know, I started off my military service, active duty Marine Corps. And I was only in for 4 years. I got out before everything got super crazy in late 2002. But the indoctrination process is the biggest difference that I've seen, because I've been in the Army now for almost three times as long as I was ever in the Marine Corps.
I didn't go to school, but that's a lot more than four.
Yeah. I've been in the Army for a little over a decade now. National Guard, take that as you will. Make your comments. I don't really care. I'm an advanced Girl Scout. And I still get to live a real life.
But they don't sell cookies.
But yeah, we don't sell cookies. So the indoctrination process is the biggest difference that I've seen between the Army and the Marine Corps, and actually all branches of service. Everybody kind of has their own thing. But the biggest difference I've seen is the guys that I've known going through AIT, because my AIT in the Army was very long. It was like almost a year. And seeing the kids fresh out of basic training from the Army there, the way the Marine Corps does it is very, very different. You show up, and I showed up, and it was a week before my 19th birthday. And I'm like, I know how to do these things. I know how to walk. I know how to talk. I know how to eat. You know, I know how to do some stuff in my life because I've been doing it for a while. Well, the Marine Corps not so politely informs you that you don't know how to do anything at all. Like, you can't even dress yourself appropriately because you spend all of your time learning how to dress by the numbers. So the indoctrination process is wildly, wildly different. You know, it's, you are nothing. There is no I. You speak about yourself in the third person. Like, I spent 3 months speaking in the third person. It took me a little bit of time to readjust to that after boot camp was over. It's because there is no I, there is no me, there is no you. It's this recruit, that recruit, those recruits, you know, it's all third person and they slowly, they break you down to complete nothing. And then they rebuild you back up in the image of the Marine Corps, which is why most Marines are so terribly arrogant, because it's the indoc process.
They're supposed to be that way.
Yeah. That's kind of it's the process of how it works. So having never been to Army basic training, but knowing a lot of people that have been to Army basic training, I had a buddy of mine tell me when he got back from basic, he's like, dude, he's like, Navy Sea Cadets was harder than Army basic. And he was a combat engineer. So he went through the OSIT program at Fort Leonard Wood. He's like,
then we have similar experiences.
He was like, it's a joke. He's like, it was terrible. He's like, the PT was not hard. He's like, it was one of the easiest things I've ever done in my life. He's like, all you had to do was follow a couple of simple rules and everything was fine.
Yet you still have people that fail out of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So
I would say it was the same thing. When I went to basic training, it was 2011, which is a long time ago for me. I mean, it's nothing for most of the people listening to the show.
Oh, my God.
But so when I went, you know, I had these two guys in my life, my father and then my neighbor, who's a really good friend of mine, who's been on our show, actually. Scott, telling me about, it's going to be so hard and you're going to do this and that. And it's going to be like just really, really physically demanding and super hard. And then I got there and I was like, this really isn't that hard. Yeah. Physically, this isn't really very difficult. Like I said earlier, I mean, you still had people that failed to adapt to the new lifestyle, you know, fresh off the block and just think they can still do whatever they want. And they pretty quickly get that situation rectified or they get kicked out. But, yeah, I mean, physically, why Army basic training is designed to take you from a normal person to being in relatively halfway decent physical shape. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to show up like all super roided out, ready to go, right? The whole purpose of this basic training is to get you to a basic level of proficiency that you can then expand on after you complete basic training, right?
You
can then take to better. Whereas I had the idea in my head that they were just going to like just completely destroy you physically. And not that we didn't get smoked and stuff like that, because we absolutely did. We spent hours out in the backyard.
Oh, yeah.
Running freaking circles. And
I lost 20 pounds. I lost 20 pounds in boot camp.
Yeah, I stayed the same, but I didn't have my beer belly like I do now. I couldn't drink back then either, though, of course. But
yeah, too young.
I was too young to drink. I was 18 when I went to basic training. So yeah, physically it really wasn't all that hard. Mentally, they definitely required you to learn faster than, say, going as a kid out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
The learning curve was a little bit steeper than it was, and there were physical consequences for not learning what you were supposed to learn, you know, which is not something that people nowadays get in school, really. They're like, if you don't fail a math test, they're not going to, like,
kick you out in the freaking track
and smoke the dog piss out of you for a couple hours, you know. And they do that in Army training, at least they did. You know, I can't attest to what it's like now. I have
I think that also kind of is one of the big misconceptions about any form of basic training is you're not just learning how to be in the military and learning the customs and courtesies. There's a lot of, like, I know for me, we had knowledge books of just history. Like, we had to carry these green binders, and I still have mine somewhere. They're old and written in, and calendars and any type of sexual innuendo I could find in that book is underlined or highlighted. You know, they're terrible. But we spent, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours a day on, like, traditional education type stuff where you're sitting and listening to classes and then you're taking a test and you're learning skills and knowledge and dates. And I mean, you know, it's not particularly easy when you slept for 4.5 hours last night. You got up, you ran 3 miles this morning, you had breakfast in 10 to 12 minutes or less, you know.
Yeah.
Then you marched the longest possible route on the smallest island I've ever been on in my life. You marched the longest possible route, which I had no idea how small Paris Island actually was until I graduated boot camp.
And got to, like,
my barracks were less than a half mile from the main gate. Huh. I had no idea. Like, none. Zero. But then you march, and then you have to sit in this classroom in these uncomfortable chairs and watch this death by PowerPoint crap, and you're just like, oh, God.
And if you fall asleep.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. I made that mistake one time, and then I got really good at sleeping with my head up. Because I noticed if your head went down, they'd bust you. If your head stayed up, you didn't get caught so much.
Yeah, so. Well, we had the same thing. You know, you have your smart book that you get, like, as soon as you get into reception, you get given this smart book, and they're like, when you're not doing something for the Army, you're reading the smart book. Mm-hmm. I can't even tell you how many times I read that thing cover to cover. Like, it's not a big book either, but
no.
And most of it at the beginning is, of course, just like, the Army's been around for this long, and they've done this and this, and fought in this war and that war, and the Army's great, and the Army's awesome, and you should love the Army. And you know, that's what the first, like, half of the book is, and the second half is like, oh, and by the way, this is how you hold a gun, this is how you take a couple steps, mm-hmm. you know, and march in a formation. But, and they force you to work, or they force you to read that thing anytime you're not doing, like you mentioned the chow hall. For us, when we were waiting in line at the chow hall, that's what you did. And if you didn't have your nose in that smart book, then you would get yelled at and called out. And if you weren't turning pages every now and then too, like if you were just like, oh, well, I'll be smart and just stand there with this book open and look at it. No, if they didn't see you turn a page every once in a while, then they would come over and
you'd just be like, I'm a sorry drill sergeant, just, I don't know how to read. Like,
oh, I'm a sorry drill sergeant? And then they'd take you outside and fucking smoke the piss out of you too, you know? So the Army does that indoctrination thing a little bit, but I definitely don't think that they focus on it as much as they should. You know, I especially now as a young leader, air quotes on leader, I see soldiers come out of basic training and they just don't have any pride in what they do. They're not like, oh, the Army's awesome. They just show up and they're like, whatever, it's a thing I do to get paid. I'm like, no.
Well, now if you ask a Marine what they do, right? You see somebody, oh, you're in the Marine Corps, well, you know, or what are you doing? And they say, oh, well, I'm a Marine, right? Ask a soldier, a sailor, an airman, whatever, and they tell you their job. Yeah. They don't tell you, oh, I'm in the Army or I'm a soldier. They go, oh, I'm a data entry clerk or I'm a EOD tech or, oh, I'm a Navy SEAL. You know, or I'm a Force Recon Marine. There's enough of those guys to fill up a fucking stadium. Anyhow, the indoctrination process is definitely wildly different. And I wish we had an Air Force or a Navy guy in here to chime in on that process, but we don't.
We'll have to work that into the schedule sometime. Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a Navy guy come in and talk about their basic training. I think it's because they know in their heart that, well, we're just going to tear them down if they start talking about it.
Actually, I've talked to a few guys about it, and it's very similar to the Marine Corps, but it's organized a little bit differently. Like, the PT is still pretty strict in their boot camp, and they have to learn how to plug holes in ships. And, like, it's...
That doesn't sound fun to me
at all. No, No.
You know, one person I did hear from that was interesting to me is I knew a guy in high school. Well, after we graduated high school, I ran into him, and he went to Coast Guard basic training. And he actually failed out of Coast Guard basic training, right? And he was just telling me about it, and I'm like, wow, that actually sounds more rigorous than I would assume Coast Guard basic training would be. And
well, they're mirrored very much after the Navy.
Yeah.
Like, almost identical.
Well, and they also are a little more strict on who they accept into the Coast Guard to begin with anyway, because they're so small and they have a reasonably large budget they can afford to be like, no.
Yeah, we don't want you in the Coast Guard. That's interesting. I never talked to anybody about. I never even like assumed that. I don't know.
You just kind of think. You just assume they like sign a paper and.
I mean, he's like being a cop.
They go to corporate.
You know? Yeah, they go to the office and sign some papers and then maybe they go do this little thing. But I would never have considered it like a boot camp or an indoc process. That's interesting.
I know.
I'm gonna have to research that.
Yeah, and apparently this guy I knew like pulled his shoulder or something out of socket and when he was doing something and they just. And they didn't do what the Army does, where they're like, oh, well, we'll keep you in the process for like 6 months while you heal and let you redo basic training. No, they were like, okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. Come back later.
We'll take somebody who's physically fit instead of you. Whereas, that's another problem I have with the Army is, of course, that they give you so many opportunities to try again. No, if you fail, they're within reason, right?
Yeah.
If you fail because of the training that you were doing, like, let you down, like you were supposed to do this and the Army gave you that instead and you hurt yourself as a result of it, then, okay, yeah, you get a mulligan. But if you are just a weak body, you don't get to redo that, you know?
Yeah, and the Army takes way too long to kick guys out. So,
oh, God.
Dude, I can
wax poetic about this all day because in the reserves, like, it's impossible to kick people out. I have so many freaking shit bags that I have to deal with, and you just can't kick them out. It takes
those millennials, though.
Oh, my God, I hate
it. So I showed up to EOD school, and they had a broken body platoon, and most of the guys in the broke platoon were IET kids, so they're fresh out of basic training, fresh off the street, no idea what they're doing in their life. The longest they've ever been away from mom and dad. I show up and I'm talking to this guy, and he's kind of fat. You know, he's not super fat, but he's kind of fat. And I'm like, what are you, you know, what's going on, man? He's like, oh, well, I couldn't pass my PT test in basic. But you graduated? Well, yeah. Get up. What?
Yeah, that part I hate too.
So, and I'm like, well, what's going on? He's like, well, apparently I broke my leg or I don't remember what his story was. Something was wrong with him physically after basic training. Basic training broke his body. Fast forward 11 months later when I graduate EOD school, that guy is still there, still waiting to be processed out and weighing 250, 275-ish. Like just continued to get fatter and fatter and fatter.
Oh, yeah, that Army chow hall though.
Dude, like. Get the guy out. Yeah, now, the Marine Corps, we had the pork chop platoon, PCP. It's a
pork chop platoon.
We call it a pork chop. I don't remember what it actually stands for, but it's for like people that break themselves or they get sick and they get rolled out of training. So you go and you're there for X amount of time and they put you back in training. And I think you got like two or three tries, you know, because we had a guy that we picked up near graduation that had actually broken his ankle. Like within the first couple of weeks of boot camp.
Oh, that would suck so bad.
Yeah. And then I've got another buddy that's in my unit here, first week and a half, 2 weeks, somewhere in that range, broke his femur in Marine Corps boot camp. And they're like, sorry, bro. We'll see you later. Admin sup. You know, so it's kind of a toss up between whether or not they're going to let you stay or not. But you only get so many chances. You roll out of training more than three times. See you later, bro. Have a nice life.
The problem is in the Army, I mean, I'm sure there's a similar policy, right? But the problem that I have is that the Army will drag that process out for so freaking long.
It takes forever.
And it's not like, oh, I see like a terrible soldier who's failing this and failing that. I can't just be like, hey, sorry, dude. You're getting chaptered out of the Army. You're done. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way.
It's actually pretty easy in the Guard.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we can get somebody out within about 6 months, usually, we can get them processed out.
Damn, I wish, because absolutely cannot do that. It has to go through every freaking chain of command that was ever invented. Somehow, there's, like, a guy at a desk in some place you've never heard of that has to, like, approve it, and he only does, like, six a year or something.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is terrible.
He does, like, one a day.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big difference, I think, too, is the point at which they stop letting you redo, I think.
Well, and AIT is the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Army AIT, I've heard, is actually pretty good about that, though, recycling people who suck. I knew someone who failed out of EOD school, and they like sat in a room for like 2 months and just looked at a wall, and then they were like, okay, bye-bye, you're done. You don't get to redo it.
Yeah. Well, I got dropped from training and had to go through the appeal process to get back into training, and I did. But even that was a 50-50 shot. You know, you have to write a really good letter and show up to study hall, and you have to prove that you actually want to be there. You know, so, but there were guys, after I graduated EOD school, there were guys that were getting, they would double tap a test 7 or 8 times, you know, same test. And they just keep getting another chance, keep getting another chance, keep getting another chance.
Yeah. Fortunately, in my little cycle that I went through, because I did OSIT, like John mentioned earlier, where you do basic and AIT combined into one thing. I don't think we had anybody fail AIT. If we had people fail basic training, we didn't have anybody fail AIT. Not that lame MP AIT is all that hard to begin with, but we didn't have anybody fail. We had, I think, one girl got sent home or got chaptered out of the Army during AIT, and that's because she got caught doing things she wasn't supposed to do. So
did she really get pregnant?
No. It didn't have anything to do with the training. It just had to do with her being a shitbag, so she got kicked out.
And I think that's where... one of the big differences is, like, for us, for our school, you one incident like that, you're done, period. Don't come back. Don't retry. Don't reapply. Nope. Sorry, bro. If your character is at all questionable and you get caught, that's the key, is if you get caught, you're done. And that's a lifelong process for us. You know, even me as a master badge now, if I got like a DUI or some other questionable crap like that, dude, I'm out of the job. I'm definitely out of the career field, probably out of the Army.
Yeah, that's something I hate about this really is supposed to be a talk about the reserves and stuff, I guess, but that's something I hate about the reserves, too. There are people at my unit, and I don't think I've ever named my unit on the show, and I'm probably not going to, but you can find it out pretty easy if you really wanted to, who have multiple DUIs and multiple, like, DV charges and shit pending on them, and guess what? They're still in the Army Reserve, and they're still military police.
That's shenanigans.
Because there's nothing that we can do about it at the command level in the reserves. I can't Article 15 people. I can't take pay away from people. I can't make them do extra duty. I can't do any of that stuff. All I can do is write a negative counseling statement for somebody.
I'd write them one every day.
The only people that have any kind of authority whatsoever is like a unit commander, and the only thing he can do is pass it up to the battalion commander. And the only thing he can do is pass it up to the brigade commander, and so on and so on. That's why it takes so freaking long. So like I got guys that have done drugs, that have done DUI, that have done domestic violence, that just get to hang around and still be in because the process to kick them out is so convoluted.
Wow.
And there's so many steps in the chain that they just can't be kicked out. Now, don't get me wrong. They will eventually be kicked out, right? And until then, they're going to get treated like shit by everybody at the unit.
Yeah, no kidding.
But they're just taking up spots for people that maybe want to be there and do things, you know, and they're just hanging out in the background. So that, you know, that's something that I really freaking hate.
Wow.
Too.
That's terrible.
But like I said, don't get me wrong. It's not like we're letting them do things still. Basically, right. Once they're identified, they're put in a place, and you're going to stay there. You're not going to do anything.
Working
every
parties.
Time we're at drill, you're going to be the first person that goes and does the stupid bullshit stuff. You're just going to do that for...
You get the fill sandbags.
Yeah, you're just going to do that for 2 years until the paperwork goes through to kick you out.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So that part has always been a big... That just blows my freaking mind to me. Whereas I have guys in my unit that come back from active duty, and they're like, dude, if he did that in active duty, his ass would have been gone.
Like, oh, yeah. Well, it's easy because you could, like, just walk the paper to where it needs to go.
Yeah.
And...
Whereas
we
don't have any of those resources, which is stupid. So, yeah, there's some differences between Marine Corps, Marine Corps, and...
Yeah, the good old Marines.
AIT. That was actually point number 3 on my list of points we were supposed to talk about that I made up, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
No big deal. Point number 1...
Oh, yeah.
Is change in people who attend and who train at basic training, right? That's a big generational thing, right?
And that's a huge generational thing.
This is something we could like yell at each other back and forth across the table for a long time.
We could just fist fight about this. So I joined in 1999, right? Pre 9/11. I'm one of the few people like in my normal social circle that's pre 9/11.
I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
When you were killing commies for Jesus, I was 6 years old.
So, but when I joined, it was, we were still training in the Cold War fashion, you know, And we weren't the cell phone generation, the Facebook generation.
Because none of those things were invented.
Yeah, none of those things existed yet. So it was all very different, but it was all very much geared. All of our training was still geared toward the Cold War.
How did you entertain yourself without a cell phone?
We talked and had conversation.
What is that?
It was weird.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. But like my introduction to Marine combat training, which is where all non-grunt Marines go after they graduate boot camp, and you go through this 21 day. Anyhow, you go through the Marine combat training course where you learn the basics, the absolute basics of being a rifleman.
Because every Marine is a rifleman.
Yeah, first. Exactly. But so during that process, we're learning how to do patrols and all of this crap. And it's, if you open your canteen, you pass it down the line and the whole canteen gets emptied out so that it doesn't slosh around and make noise. And you duct tape all of the metal parts, or you put electrical tape on them so they don't clink and clank. And, you know, everything's all very silent and noise discipline and red lights. Oh, my God, the red moon beam.
It was like a L-shaped flashlight.
Yeah, dude, that was a deal, man. I've still got one.
Even when I was in, that's what they gave us to use.
Yeah, I've still got one. I think that's because they bought all of them that were ever made.
At one time, they got just like a warehouse full of millions of these.
There's like this massive warehouse full of moonbeams. But it was all very different. You know, it's not like it is now, where we're not learning how to fight that Cold War. We're, you know, having been at war for a few years, and you could probably speak to this a little bit. Yeah, a couple. You could probably speak to this a little bit better, because I don't know what the Army was like. I know Glenn says that when he was in, it was all still that Cold War stuff, because he came in 2001, 2002-ish.
He was in before 9/11.
Right, yeah, right before,
I think. He got out before 9/11 happened, so.
Did he?
Late 90s, I think. Early, like 2000?
No, 2002. Anyhow, but when he went in, he was saying that they were still doing that kind of Cold War type of training. What was it like for you, having already been at war for a decade when you joined? I'm sure you guys were learning how to share canteens and be silent.
Yeah, like I was just about to tell you too. I've never heard of that canteen thing.
Oh yeah, dude, that's real.
You drink it and pass it down. Nope, never heard of it. Well, because one, we didn't have canteens. We all have Camelbacks.
All right.
Right?
All
right. So like in basic training, you get issued a Camelback for like 3 days in reception.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you get to your unit, everything from that and on is Camelbacks, right?
Yeah.
One thing I would say that was really nice about my AIT is that all of my drill instructors were like fairly decorated.
Drill sergeants?
We call them drill sergeants.
I know.
I'm in the Marine Corps mindset still.
It's all right.
All of my drill, please don't come and put a fist through my microphone, drill sergeant, and like rip my face off. I could see that happening somehow. Track me down. But all my drill sergeants were fairly like decorated MPs, mm-hmm. which to anybody else that's not an MP sounds gay, of course, I'm sure. Because, you know, you're way better than MPs are. But I'm talking like Bronze Stars and shit like that.
Yeah.
Two of my two platoon drill sergeants both had Bronze Stars.
With or without a V device?
Both the dudes did. I'm not sure. I didn't ask.
Well, you should be able to see.
They were all NCOs. Dude, I saw them in a dress uniform one time, graduation day. And that was it. Okay. And all I could think about graduation day was, I'm going to go home and eat so much food, and I'm going to take so long to do it. It's going to be great.
Nice.
But they were all pretty highly decorated. And as an NCO to get a Bronze Star, even not with a V, you know, it's still... doesn't happen as often, right?
Yeah, it depends.
So, you know, they were all very highly decorated, at least two combat deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, like just really squared away dudes, you mm-hmm. know? And so that, I would say, is an advantage that I had because, yeah, they have this terrible, not terrible, but they have this curriculum that they have to make us follow.
Yeah.
But then they'd also take us aside after training and be like, hey, just so you know, this is how this is actually going to be when you get to the real Army. And when you get to Afghanistan or you get to Iraq, this is what's really going to happen and how it's really going to work out, not how the book says it's going to happen.
You know?
So that, I'd say, is an advantage.
Because there's the book way and the real way.
Yeah, and the real way to do things, you know. And I would say a disadvantage, of course, is like, especially looking at the political climate now, we didn't really learn anything about conventional warfare at all. We did no training for conventional warfare. Every FTX that we had was insurgents are the bad guys,
mm-hmm.
and you're going after insurgents. So you always outnumber the enemy. You might not have positioning on the enemy, but you always outnumber the enemy. And usually you have more firepower in your hands than the enemy does. And you always work from a base. You know, we always had FOB set up that you got to, like, go inside the fob and kind of not all the way relax, but chill a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And then you'd leave the fob, go to your missions and come back, and you get to not relax because we're in basic training, of course, but not worry about getting a blank shot through your face or a simulated knife in your temple or whatever, you know? And so that was kind of, I would say that as a disadvantage, you know? The closest thing we ever came to, like, camping out is just walking out in the middle of the woods and, okay, pitch a tent with your battle buddy, and that's it. And here's how you pitch a tent. Here's how you, like, put the little trenches around it so that if it rains, it doesn't flood your tent.
You guys learn how to dig fighting positions? Or is the army calls them foxholes?
Yeah. Okay. We actually never were allowed to dig any because...
What?
You can't dig up the ground because, you know, that's not ecologically sound. But, and, like, we had a guy come in and was talking to us not long ago about, like, how to dig a natural foxhole. Like, you're supposed to measure it based on your shovel, like, this many shovels long and this many shovels, whatever.
Yeah.
That they did not teach us. I did not know that. They were just like, hey, dig a hole here that you can fit inside of. So, like, I got to go back through the infantry leader's handbook and look some of that shit up because it has been a long time.
That was by far one of the, I will say, digging the first fighting position I ever dug was by far one of the worst things I've ever done in my life. Because I had to dig it in North Carolina at Camp Geiger, like, less than a foot away from a pine tree that had been there since Jesus.
Yeah.
And the roots were ridiculous. And everybody digs the E-tool, right? If you've never dug a hole with an E-tool, it's really not all that great of a piece of equipment.
Nope.
Like, it works, and you can do a lot of cool things with it. It makes a great pooping stool. Hit me up sometime, and I'll explain how that works, because nobody likes to squat and poop in their pants, because that's happened.
To me, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it happens. But, yeah, that was by far. I am sad that you've never – that saddens me, Mason.
Well,
next time we're at the range, we will Glenn and I will help you correct that deficiency.
I believe that you will.
We will teach you that skill set.
Douchebags. So yeah, that was a big difference. We didn't really learn the conventional warfare stuff because, I mean, in a modern war, doing the job that I do, you don't dig foxholes. We don't dig fighting positions. We have a fob that we go back to at the end of the day, unfortunately.
And we drive around giant armored
and
trucks.
We have giant armored trucks. I mean, look, you can talk shit about it, yeah, but that's my job, right? So I do that. I
drive around in an armored truck and wait for someone to call me.
Yeah. You know, if I was infantry, I would walk around and kill people, but all I do is drive around and say nice things to people or whatever and give people tickets apparently for stupid shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's all MPs do is give people traffic tickets.
Nobody likes MPs because they always ruin the fun.
I'm going to talk about MPs for just a second here, though.
Oh,
one
Lord.
Thing that I would say the Army has evolved a little bit is, like, at the beginning of all these wars, that military police were exactly what you think military police are. They're the dudes that stay on a base and ruin all your fun.
Yeah.
Either for your own good or for sometimes just for their
good. They write tickets at Bagram Air Base.
Yeah,
because douchebags. You didn't wear your PT belt.
No, because the Bagram thing is, I'm going to get into that. There's a lot of douchebags that work there too. And I know some of them that deployed there and I'm like, you're an asshole. Anyway, but I digress. So as we kind of went on through this war, commanders and stuff were like, hey, wait a minute. We have this job that we need people to do, but infantry guys don't do this stuff. And we
send cooks
to do it.
The same thing happened to a lot of the artillery guys.
Yeah, they would be doing jobs that they're like, look, one of my buddies, too, is an artilleryman. Mm-hmm. They did dismounted patrols as an artilleryman, and he's kind of like, I mean, sure, like, we can do it, but...
Okay.
Whereas, and it was the same thing with MPs. There's, like, all these jobs that need doing that there isn't an MOS for, so they're like, oh, we'll just take those freaking guys that... sit on the base and don't do anything and have them go do it, right? So that's kind of evolved, which is nice. We have some cool-ish jobs that we do that don't involve giving people traffic tickets or yelling them for not wearing their PT belts. So
good for you, Mason.
That's an increase that happened as a result of this new war, you know, so whatever, whether that's good or bad, I guess, is up to you. But other differences, I guess, that's...
Hey.
We're supposed to be talking about the people that go in, right? So let's talk about the big thing that everyone is worried about.
So
these millennials are super soft and they can't do anything. And
so I can actually speak directly to this. I was talking to the boss lady this weekend. It's my wife, for those of you that don't know. If you're married, that's right. She's your boss. Get over it. Move on with your life. We were actually talking about this, and she did some survey because the Department of the Army sends out survey requests constantly.
God, yeah.
Oh, my God. I've been getting the same letter from them for like 4 years now because I've never done their stupid
survey.
Yeah, like,
hey, survey.
Because I don't really care. But we were talking about it, and she's like, one of the questions was, do you feel like, and this will kind of lead into the TRADOC thing that we're going to get to in a minute, which is a giant goat rope.
Oh, God.
Goat rope? How do you feel, because my wife and I are both senior NCO-ish people.
I'm just going to throw that out there. A little bit more senior.
Yeah, she's a little bit more senior. But anyhow, she's like, how do you feel that the AIT process is, do you feel that it's effective in building soldiers, like making soldiers good soldiers, good people? And generally speaking, we have a somewhat skewed view of what a good soldier is in my career field, because we're such a tiny, tiny career field. And most of the people that end up in our career field are usually pretty freaking switched on people to begin with. And essentially what my wife's conclusion was, and after we talked about it for a little bit, I kind of happened to agree with her, is that if you are not switched on, squared away, or whatever, if you don't have that thing before you go and do this, the Army's not doing anything to instill it in you, right? Because we get a couple of different MOSs. One of our mechanics is, he's kind of a turd. One of our other mechanics, though, is pretty switched on, pretty squared away guy. So it really comes down to what type of person you are to start with, as opposed to what you're being taught in Army, AIT and Army basic training, in my opinion. And I've kind of seen this because we have a couple of we're starting to get a lot more millennials in the shop. And one of them in particular, I love the guy. He's a fantastic dude, super funny. But he's gotten in trouble with his team leader and platoon sergeant on several occasions for Facebook posts, right?
God, that's such a big thing, too.
There's definitely a difference in the people and the way people grew up that I have seen. Because, I mean, I've been doing this for almost 18 years now, a little over 18 years now. And I've definitely seen a change in the people. And it's generational. It's because things are around that weren't around when I was that age. Because I'm fairly confident that if we had had MySpace instead of AOL Messenger, because that was the big thing for me, was AOL Messenger, AOL was a big deal in 2000.
Oh my God, John.
Yeah, exactly. Had we had Facebook, I would have posted photos and all this crap. And we didn't really have smartphones. All of our cell phones were still like
briefcase.
Yeah, well, no, they were flip phones at this point. You know,
razors.
Before pre-razor, actually. I didn't get my first razor until like 2005. So it was all flip phones and texting, and pagers were finally on their way out, thank God.
Yeah.
Which I never had. Always wanted one as a kid. Anyhow, I digress.
Like do you guys ever have pen pals, those like palm size things?
Oh, the Palm Pilots?
Yeah, Palm Pilot.
Yeah. No, I never had a Palm Pilot. I was a poor white kid, so no. I was super quiet. But I remember the original like Sidekick. It was like this phone that flipped open and had a keyboard on it. Super cool.
Mind blown.
Yeah, exactly. So there's definitely been a change in the type of people. The military still attracts a slightly better than average type of person.
Not that if you're not in the military, you're not an awesome person.
No, that's
right?
But don't take that wrong.
I wouldn't say better because, you know, that's mean, I guess, but different type of person.
Okay, we'll go with different.
Not that we're all sensitive and shit like that, but it just makes us sound like assholes if we say people in the military are better. They're not really better. They're just different.
Better at some things than others.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
So anyhow.
There's so much hate mail.
That's all right.
Glenn's going to get so much hate mail.
Glenn will appreciate it. Maybe he'll share it.
But that'd be glorious.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
I would agree with yours and your wife's assessment. You know, part of the problem, I think, like in the little list of things I put together to talk about, one of them is that TRADOC is killing the Army.
Yeah. So interesting story. Do you know why TRADOC exists?
No.
So there was this guy. There was this general. This is the same reason that the Army went to Black Berets. Same kind of thing happened with TRADOC.
So yeah, we got rid
super
of that.
Gay. I was in the Marine Corps when that happened, and I was pissed off about it. I was like, no, that's a Ranger thing. I hate the Army, but that's a Ranger thing. Rangers have berets. The rest of the Army does not.
Or a dress uniform thing.
So anyhow, I digress again. But holy crap, that train just ran. So TRADOC was started because there was a general that wanted a command, and there wasn't a command to send him to. So they created the Training Indoctrination Command.
Oh boy,
that's how TRADOC came to be.
Problems.
Yeah, so officers. We'll create something new. We'll put a stovepipe in a stovepipe, and make this way more complicated.
So yeah, I would say TRADOC really is destroying the army. But one of the big reasons, too, is like John said, you know, if you go into the army as a shitbag, go into basic training as a shitbag, chances are you're going to come out basic training as a shitbag. You're just going to know a little bit more than you did before.
And you'll be able to, I'll say 8 out of 10, you'll be able to slip through and slide through as long as you can fake it for a little bit of time. Yeah. You'll be all right.
And the problem is that basic training is not a lot of time, so you can fake it, right? I think, of course, it's easy to say when you've gone through it, you know, and that's what I'm sure people that haven't would say, but basic training needs to be longer. It definitely needs to be longer than it is right now.
It's what, 6 weeks? Just basic training is 6 weeks?
I think like seven.
Seven, okay.
When I went in, it was like seven. I don't know, I can't remember. But so it definitely needs to be longer because that gives drill sergeants more time to see the freaking shitbags that are hiding out inside the ranks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But it also gives them time to instill a sense of value in soldiers, right? Because like you mentioned, I'll get soldiers that'll come to me fresh out of AIT, you know, show up to their first drill. And I'm like, all right, hey, cool, man. How's it going? What's the soldier's creed? And they're like, what's that? Or they're like, oh, I don't remember, Sergeant. And I'm like, you just got out of basic and AIT and you can't tell me what the goddamn soldier's creed is?
I don't know the soldier's creed.
How long have you been out of basic training? You never went to basic training in the Army. Bam, there you go. Problem solved, right?
All right.
If you are a brand new soldier in the Army and
you should know,
you don't know the basic soldier's creed, that's a problem that needs to be corrected, right? You come out, you're a fresh soldier out of AIT, and you don't pass your first PT test back at your unit.
They don't have to pass one to graduate, though. It's like 50%.
Yeah, so to graduate basic, you have to pass it with 50, but to graduate AIT, you have to pass it with 60.
Yeah.
Which is the Army standard.
Not
saying 60%. That's really not how that works, but you have to pass it with a 60 minimum in order
60
to
points.
Graduate
60
AIT.
Points in each event.
Yeah, to graduate AIT, but 50 to graduate basic training. Which is asinine. Like, why would you make them graduate with less than the standard for when they're in the actual Army? That doesn't make any freaking sense.
Well, because that's why we get the Army patch now. You seen that crap?
No.
So the deployment patch, which in my opinion, the Army put way too much emphasis on, oh, you don't have a deployment patch?
Yeah, but it's there. So
look, turd.
Do it.
Not everybody's been deployed, all right? You can learn a lot from people that haven't been deployed. Because they've been in their career field forever and they were in commands that weren't deployable. Whatever reason, right? I don't really give a shit if you've got a deployment patch or not. But at one point, the Army was giving these kids, and I saw this at EOD school, and this was 2008. Yeah, 2007. 2007 into 2008. These kids were showing up from basic with the Army. It's like the big square with the star in it. U.S. Army on the... left sleeve?
Yeah, right-hand side.
Right sleeve, yeah, right?
Deployment patch is on the right, John.
On their, see, I don't Army very well, right? I'm an advanced
on
Girl Scout.
On scale of one to Army,
I don't very well. But they were showing up with these patches, and I'm like, what the ever-loving dog shit is this? And they're like, oh, well, it's our deployment patch from basic training. And I'm like, oh, my God!
Choke yourself.
Take this shit off. I don't care what you're... fucking drill sergeant said that you could wear. You're dumb.
More likely, I don't care what your commander told your drill sergeant he had to let you do.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Because any drill sergeant that I know would have ripped a private's face off.
Because that's when I think that's about the time they really started pandering to the everybody's a winner kind of mindset and mentality.
Yeah, well, and you remember when they did the whole, hey, we don't want you guys wearing your deployment patches because it's making some of the younger soldiers feel left out. Then deploy.
I didn't get that at my unit at
all. Well, not at my unit. There was an active duty Army unit, though, where that was a big thing that was going around, like a famous unit, too. And I'd have to look the article up to remember exactly what it was. But
that's right. Colonel or whatever.
Rosa. Yeah, they were you guys need to take your deployment patches off because the younger soldiers are feeling left out. And they should have deployed, and then they wouldn't feel left out.
Well, it's not even that they should have deployed. Look, the kid's half your age. Kid's been in the Army for seven minutes.
Of course they're not going to have deployment patches. They haven't had time to deploy.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like John says, I'm with John on the whole... deployment patches don't mean you're a good soldier. Oh, my God, do they not mean that?
Yeah, not at all.
I can't even express how much they do not mean that. But because of the culture that is kind of prevalent in the military now, soldiers fresh out of AIT and stuff, they're going to look at guys with deployment patches and just think, oh, well, that guy knows his shit because he's got a deployment patch, right? Because we do put a lot of emphasis
on the
deployment
patch thing. I know guys that got a deployment patch for sitting in Kuwait and doing nothing.
Yeah, I know a dude...
I'm one of those guys.
There's a dude in my unit who wore one for a deployment in air quotes to Bahrain.
It's a deployment.
Like, it's a deployment where you get to buy prostitutes and alcohol and shit. Like, that's okay, whatever.
Deployment's a deployment.
No one's trying to kill you, you know?
I did like two of those in the Marine Corps. I did two Westpacs in the Marine Corps. Those were deployments. Granted, the first one was mostly just liberty and training. Yeah. It was fantastic. The second one, we ended up doing a lot of support for Operation Anaconda. And actually, on the first one, we did the recovery for the USS Cole. Not combat, you know, but still like real live
like
operations.
Real mission.
Yeah, like real missions, real live operations and stuff. But it wasn't something that people talked about in the Marine Corps. We didn't have deployment patches. There was no deployment. There are ribbons because you get like your overseas service ribbons.
Your expeditionary forces ribbon
and stuff like that. But it wasn't something that was like, oh, you don't have that? You're a piece of shit.
One thing I really like that the Marine Corps does, and I think they do that because the Navy doesn't, but is your combat action thing isn't a badge. It's a ribbon.
Yeah. And it's an individual award.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I hate the Army's combat action badge because it's just like, oh, well, you were like there. Okay, neat. Here's a...
And initially, that's kind of how it started, and it's actually a lot harder to get now than it was when they started giving it out, because it used to be, they basically issued it out like a freaking unit award.
I did read the policy that they just changed about
like
that,
you
too,
as an individual have to be engaged in direct combat.
And one of the big things was like, oh, well, you were on a base that got mortared, so you get a cab.
No.
You know, like that used to be a thing.
You have to be engaged by like an enemy weapon system. So I got a cab because I was engaged by an enemy weapon system. So, I don't wear it. Like I never wear it.
Yeah,
it's on my dress uniform.
A couple times, I've never seen you.
I wear it on my dress uniform. That's it. I don't wear it on my regular. Stupid. Because it supposedly goes above my badge, and I completely disagree. Badge above all. Crabs over castles for all those engineers out there.
Plus, one thing also that I've noticed in my admittedly limited military career, looking back on it. All the best NCOs that I've ever served under never wore that stuff, but had them.
Yeah.
The guys that I think back and look at now that were douchebags wore their cabs freaking day.
They had all their badges and shiny
bubbles. The leaders that I can think about now that were like the real legit down-to-earth guys that taught me the most, that I learned the most from, I literally went like years serving underneath them not knowing they had cabs until like we did one thing in dress uniforms and they had it. And I'm like, dude, you have that? And he's like, oh, yeah, dude, I got my first deployment like 4 years ago. I'm like, why don't you wear it? And they're like, because it's gay.
Yeah, it's
I'm
stupid.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. So that's definitely a lesson, you know, that I picked up on. We actually only have like 8 minutes left. So did we cover everything that we were supposed to cover?
The technology thing we kind of touched on with like cell phones and Facebook and social media.
Changes in focused on what's learning. That kind of goes back to the whole not learning about conventional warfare stuff.
Yeah.
One thing that I want to mention that's going to piss a lot of old school people off is like when I was in basic training, we spent a grand total of, I think, 3 days on marching.
What?
And that was it.
Oh, God.
For 3 days, we went to the parade ground and learned how to march, and that was it.
And that is why the Army as a whole does not know how to do drill and ceremony.
I didn't learn how to do rearward march until I went to WLC.
Holy crap,
And dude. I told my instructor that, and he's like, what do you mean you've never done this before? And I'm like, we didn't learn this in basic training.
So I'm actually going to look something up, because that's why in the Marine Corps they're called drill instructors, because the entire 90 days is all about drill.
We definitely did not focus hardly at all on that. Now, the advantage to that being a lot more of our training, we spent more time at the range. We spent more time in classrooms learning about weapon systems.
Yeah. Well, how much time did you spend on the range?
It really just depends on what weapons you're talking about. Like, overall, like all different weapons. One thing that people also don't know about MPs is that we spend a lot of freaking time learning about crew serve weapon systems, man. Like, every crew serve that we use
thing.
In the Army, other than miniguns, we get trained on and we shoot. And do.
Okay, so here you go. So I'm actually going to read this to you. Because this is...
You can read?
Yeah, I can read. Huh. Amazing. So this is directly from Marine Corps 113 FMF, Marine Corps Drill and Ceremonies Manual. All right, five purposes of close order drill. Move a unit from one place to another in orderly manner, maintaining appearance. Two, provide simple formations where combat formations can be readily assumed. Three, teach discipline by instilling habits of precision and automatic response to orders. Four, increase the confidence of junior officers and non-commissioned officers through the exercise of command by giving the proper commands and the controlling of troops. Give Marines an opportunity to handle individual weapons. So those are the five purposes of close order drill. Sorry, that was a thing that started playing in the background on the laptop.
Yeah.
So the Marine Corps, like, we spin from... minute zero, like, hey guys, welcome to Paris Island. Now get off of my frickin' bus and go stand on the yellow footprints. Well, guess what? The yellow footprints are in the shape of a platoon formation.
What?
Yeah. And there's like feet, heels together, feet at a 45 degree angle, thumb along the seam of the trousers, head up, leveled, chin level to the deck, shoulders back, you know, like, and it was drill from that point forward every morning, everything we did. If we walked a chow, we were in drill instructors were calling cadence. Like,
yeah,
it's all about drill.
We still did that. Don't get me wrong. Every time we go anywhere, you march there. Anytime you're in a group of three people or more, they freaking made you like march there.
Yeah. Which is so funny because in Oceanside, like right outside of Marine Corps bases, you could totally tell the kids that just graduated from camp and stuff because they still have their high and stupid haircuts. And there's three of them and they're all walking in formation, walking in step, wearing combat boots. It's hilarious to watch. It's great.
It's the same thing outside of, you know, any kind of basic training location, relaxing Jackson or Leonard Wood. But, yeah, and we still march everywhere, and we still do formations, and I spent plenty of freaking time in basic training at attention and rest. Like, oh, man. But what we didn't do was, like, the, hey, we're going to have a ceremony, so you're going to march this way and that way. Like, we did none of that. We didn't do, like, you're a company marching.
Everything.
The only time our company marched was just to get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And I definitely do see a correlation between discipline and drill and ceremony, right?
Oh, yeah. We'd spend a couple of hours a day on the grinder.
Like, having not done hardly any of it at all, I can certainly see where it comes from. You know, like, especially when I got to, when I went to WLC, which is, now it's something else, but it was.
BLC.
Yeah, the Warrior Leaders Course when I went there.
No, it's basic
now
leaders
course. Now it's way tamer.
Because you can't call people warriors.
Yeah, God forbid.
Because not everybody's a warrior.
But we are warriors.
It's my response to that.
It's statement. Funny to me though that they say that because in the Soldier's Creed they in fact say that we all are warriors.
But, yeah, I know. You know, yeah, whatever.
Contradictions.
Got to pander. Got to
pander. So, but when I went there and started learning this drill and ceremony stuff, that was the hardest part for me.
Oh yeah.
None of the like school stuff. None of the in the field. I freaking dominated. Like they were coming to me.
It's because you're awesome.
To tell them how to do field stuff, right? But we get to marching. Oh, that was like the hardest thing for me was to lead a freaking squad and
PT
like
formation
ceremony.
Like a PT formation, dude, that wrecked even. Me.
I was like,
I was like, how? What?
We never
I don't know
do
how to
that.
Do this.
Yeah, we don't ever do that in the reserves. You know,
they're like, you're an E5. You're eligible to be promoted to E6. Why don't you not do this, bro?
I don't army. Like, hey, go exercise. We're all right, neat.
I was like, I don't army.
Yeah, we don't. Oh, we don't form up like that. You know. And my unit, of course, the prep that they did for sending you to WLC was like, oh, hey, one morning you're going to do the PT formation and then bye, have fun at WLC, you know, like, neat, that doesn't help anybody at all. So, yeah, that was one of the hardest parts for me. It was the freaking directing a squad and marching. And now at my unit, after I got back from WLC, I have soldiers that are like, hey, can we do marching stuff? And I'm like, yes, I don't want to, but yes, if you guys really want to march around, we can do that, but... It's,
well, hey,
it's not
you now know the five purposes of close quarter drill.
I know that it does something for a reason, and you know, so I will definitely get into that more. You know, we have 2 minutes left.
Uh oh. Well, I think we covered everything. Basically, it comes down to the fact that every generation
stay in school, don't do drugs.
Yeah, stay in school, don't do drugs. Every generation is going to be a little bit different. Yeah, everybody's experience.
Yes, we have Facebook, okay?
Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Grindr.
I'm sorry
that
technology's better. Well, let's go back. What was that last one?
Grindr.
I'm sorry we have Facebook.
Plenty of fish and all of that. I mean, you know, social media and smartphones.
FarmersOnly.com.
Yeah, whatever. You know.
I'm sorry that technology has advanced and we have access to social media. I apologize for that.
Okay? It happens. Basically, it's all generational, man. It's like anything. Like, oh, when I went to college or... When I went to the fraternity or when I went to whatever, when I played football in high school.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, who gives a crap, dude?
It changes. With the people that go into it, it has to change and adapt.
It has to evolve.
One of the biggest things that I would say leaving this, though, is like, look at the last 15 years that we've been at war, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have still succeeded when we fight the enemy,
mm-hmm.
right? Soldiers are still going to kill bad guys.
Most of the time.
For the most part, we're still going to be good and we're still going to kill bad guys. All right.
Until the next war.
Yeah, until the next war when apparently we're all just going to die. If Glenn ever listens to this show, he can beat me up later on or something like
That's
that.
That's all right. Anyhow.
Yeah, so we're still going to win wars. We're still going to win fights.
Okay? Yes.
Soldiers are still going to be, we're still going to succeed. We're still going to be tough and resilient. Yeah. All right. We just have Facebook and we have Instagram. That we can
put pictures
of and stuff.
There is kind of a thing that we didn't touch on, and we'll touch on this real quick, is we spend way too much.
We can go over because we do what we want.
Well, the Army, and I've noticed this, spends a lot of time, and I can't speak to the other branches because I'm not in the other branches right now, but we spend a lot of time on stupid briefings about sexual harassment.
Don't rape people. Oh, really? I'm not supposed to rape people?
Yeah, exactly.
No shit.
Drug abuse. I had to sit through an hour-long class on transgender sensitivity training, is what I'll call it, on how to handle transgender soldiers. Now, I understand that it's going to happen. It's happened in the past. It's going to happen in the future. I should not have to spend an hour and a half of my precious training time that I have to learn to not call a he-she. Should be like, hey, soldier, you're a freaking soldier. I don't care what's dangling or not dangling between your legs or what you identify as. I don't care. Be a soldier, wear a uniform, do your job, pass your PT test, and be really good at your job. Don't just do your job, be good at your job. And I don't give a shit who you have sex with, who you don't have sex with, how you I don't care. You're a soldier, period. You're a soldier, you're a Marine, you're a sailor, you're an airman, you're a whatever the Coast Guards call themselves.
Coasties?
You're a coast, whatever.
Puddle pirate, do they call themselves that?
I don't think so. Thank you to all of our Coast Guard guys.
Yeah, sorry, you guys are actually awesome. I like the Coast Guard.
But, you know, it's not things that we should have to deal with.
I agree with you, I would say, like 100%.
Especially don't rape people. Really? That's kind of
don't rape people.
That's like day one crap, good. Right?
Like, as a human being, you generally should know. That's a pretty commonly accepted thing that you don't rape people, right? So. But definitely, I agree with you on that part. You know, like you said, do your. I literally don't give any F's because I'm going to say F's because we're not allowed to say the F word.
Right.
I don't give any F's who you have sex with. I don't care what you identify as. I don't care if you're like a furry on your weekends or whatever. As long as while you are in uniform and you are here, you are a good soldier and you perform your duties to the best of your ability, pass your PT test, maintain your weapons qual, clean your weapons, and as long as you do all that stuff, awesome, outstanding. Then you're good and I don't care.
Yep.
You can do whatever you want in your personal time. It does not bother me. As long as it doesn't involve me, I don't care. You're good. Be a good soldier and you're good.
All right.
So I think we did a pretty good job covering all those topics.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do computer stuff at the same time that I talked.
And Lord.
See if that works out very well.
So
apparently, I can't even do computer stuff when I'm just doing computer stuff. So
you do computer stuff. I'll close out for you, Mason.
Man, but I want to say the phrase at the
end. Well, you can do that. That's fine because that's Glenn's thing, and you like to be like Glenn. So remember.
I can only hope someday. False. Okay.
Remember, you can bring us, and by us, I mean Independence Training, out to train with you. We're actually pretty easy to host. We have a couple of minimum requirements. Info. Or email info@trainingaz.com. Ask about it. We can come out and train you, or we'll set you up and you can come out to us. Whatever. We're really easy to deal with for the most part. Remember to follow the Orange Room Show, Independence Training, and Redwire Gear on Facebook and Instagram, and then some stuff on YouTube.
Coming soon.
Yeah, for Redwire Gear, YouTube coming soon. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group.
Yes,
check out all of their other shows. They've got some great shows that cover pretty much every topic that you can possibly imagine, from home mortgages to
running a small business
as a veteran. So next week we are going to be discussing night vision suppressors and cool guy gear, and why civilians, and I use air quotes, don't really need it, or do they? Dun dun dun.
All right, guys, you have been listening to the Arms Room, and as always, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. Goodbye.